8:30 a.m. on January 3rd. Happy New Year, everyone. Thank you for being here. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the December 5th meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move for approval, Madam Chair.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Item number 3 on the agenda is public comment. If you have public comment, we have 2.5 minutes on the clock, and please state your name and address for the record. Is there anyone here for public comment?
George Gates, 312 Cooper River Drive. I'm also a member of the Planning Commission. And I sent the 4 committee members an email back in December. Ms. Hyatt responded, and that heard from the other 3. Per our procedures, our being the commission, we have to reaffirm our procedures in either January or February of every year. Over the past couple of years, we've noted that there's been some issues as to how our minutes are prepared, and that in principally what you receive and what is on the website is public comment. It is not our being the commission's comment. You don't know what questions we ask. You don't know the responses. You don't know the interaction. Unless you're willing to go onto the website and sit there and listen for 3 hours to see what goes on during our meetings. And what I am asking is your input and response so we can do 1 of 3 things with our minutes going forward. 1, leave them the way they are. 2, we reverse what is on and eliminate in the written narrative the public comment and the commission's comments, questions, and dialogue be put into writing. And that I will also point out that under the South Carolina Code, and I don't have the exact, I do have the exact number, it's 30-4-80 parentheses A, requires that the minutes be in writing. And that can be interpreted and has been interpreted as the entire dialogue that takes place during the meetings must be in writing. It cannot be recorded. I know in talking to council of the town, if we get subpoenaed under FOIA, they have them all transcribed. But that does not give the public the ability to know everything that takes place during our meetings. And I would like and would appreciate a response from you. So when we go into our meeting in 2 weeks, we have some dialogue. Additionally, we've had a meeting with town council and the planning department on this. And in closing, thank you for your service and time with the city.
Thank you. Anyone else in public comment?
Happy New Year, everyone. I'm Denise Hugo, Executive Director of Housing for All Mount Pleasant, 222 Ashley River Road in West Ashley. I'm here just to comment on the residential density changes in commercial districts. I'd like to thank, they did make some modifications, but I think we need to be realistic. Between the police, the senior center, and other concerned citizens, I'm working with 7 longtime Mount Pleasant residents that are about to become homeless, and they range in age from 40 to 75. And that is a concern. I think there is homelessness, and there actually is more poverty in Mount Pleasant than I realized until I became executive director. Also, homelessness is up 18%. It was announced this morning on the news. Economically, it is becoming more of a challenge, especially for older residents of Mount Pleasant. They have lived there, lived here their entire life. So we do appreciate the modifications made. The mayor would like us to focus on the commercial districts in terms of workforce housing. And workforce, we're finding it also includes seniors because now seniors have to work till 75 to maintain lifestyle. So we would like to just ask that no change be made. And when we're dealing with workforce housing, that we stay at the density of 12. Again, we're working with police and teachers and firemen and nurses. We're working with the hospitals. And if we want to give world-class service to residents of Mount Pleasant. We do need to have workers able to get to Mount Pleasant quickly and efficiently. So I just appreciate, and when it comes to workforce housing, I think things have not gotten better for Americans, have gotten worse, and I would hope that Mount Pleasant would consider not making a change when it comes to residential density and commercial districts, because that's where the mayor wants us to focus. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anyone else have a public comment?
Good morning. Mary Ricozzi, 136 Heritage Circle. I have a short comment regarding short-term rentals. So I recently read a news item that showed that Charleston has increased their code enforcement against illegally operating SDRs. In the last year, it was reported that they brought in more than $400,000 by going after these people that are operating illegally. There's been discussion here regarding raising the SDR permit fee to cover expenses, including an additional code enforcement person. Also, we've had discussion regarding increasing the penalty from $500 to $1,000, bringing in twice the revenue. Code enforcement, I feel, should pay for code enforcement. I don't feel that those of us that are operating legally as SDR owners should incur the increase to cover the costs of those that are operating illegally. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bill Mascio, 1319 Lake Mallard Boulevard. Y'all, I've got Mary just set up of things that needed to be done or looked at. I'm here to tell you, I think this year has been a very good year. Thank you so much for listening to us. Short-term rental means a lot to the citizens here, the people that have them. Some people can't even live here unless they do the short-term rentals. But I wanted to thank you guys. I think it's because of you and the town, Jane and Mary. I think as a result of us communicating, this time this year is better off than we were at the same time last year. Thank you very much, y'all.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment? All right, public comment is closed. Moving on to item 4 on the agenda is annexations.
Good morning. Thank you. Happy New Year. This first one is an annexation at 2310 Ruffin Road. This might sound familiar. We had about 5 parcels come in around this area a couple of months ago. And so this one is following. It is an existing single-family residence. And much like the others, you can see here on the aerial, it's on the corner lot. And it will also be designated as the same traditional neighborhood. It's recommended for R1. So it will come in as the others has. And I think the anticipation is since sewer might be extended down this way, they would like to connect to sewer. So.
Mr. Chapman?
I move for approval, Madam Chairman.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item number 5A.
Okay, this is a recommendation to or proposal to amend the Wilson Tract PD. The Wilson Tract PD is a very large plan development. It's what covers Town Center, but it also covers some older single-family residences in that surrounding area. So this is going to be specific to the Sweetgrass Phase 3 single-family subdivision, and more specifically to their boat storage amenity area. So this is the area we're talking about. You can see the IOP connector, Hungry Neck Boulevard, and it backs up to the Iron Gate Plaza on the corner there. Again, this is all zoned PD, and this area is designated for recreation and land use. So basically what happened, and this is a very basic request, but some of these older PDs, the purpose of a PD, of course, is to write in some flexibility. Sometimes they write in more specific requirements. And this one, which was adopted, I think, early 90s, actually was very specific about their boat amenity area. It was 87 by 150 feet. And they would like to expand it. When the covenants and restrictions were adopted, it prohibited the storage of boats on your lot. So this amenity is very important to the neighborhood, and they've expanded, and they need more area. And so the PD is really to just expand that area. And you can see here what's proposed. So there will be 40 spots. And the good thing about this is it will need to come into compliance with buffers. And so we're going to end up with about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet of additional buffers that surround this area. And they will be taking the paved area that's existing, and they will be replacing that with crushed rock. And then the expansion will be crushed rock as well. So again, this is a proposal to amend the PD to remove that very specific measurement of 87 by 150 to expand the boat area. And then again, they will bring it into compliance. This will go to our town's DRT for review and approval. It won't need to go to DRB, but it will go through our town staff review process. And that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions. Community, do you have any questions?
Yes, ma'am. Is there any requirement to somehow contain that crushed rock with this proposal?
It's not in the proposal. I presume that's something that our engineers will look at when this goes through the town's DRT process. And the requirement for that, actually, Mr. Mitchell may be able to answer that more specifically, but I do know that they look at how that rock is contained, and that'll be part of our DRT process. It'll be addressed in the DRT. It's not going to be proposed in the PD amendment. The PD amendment is just for that, for those dimensions.
I understand, mm-hmm. and I understand that we're increasing the buffer, too, so that's
yes.
a good thing.
Yes, sir.
I just know that in some areas where you use crushed rock, it just mm-hmm. gets distributed,
right?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And if they're going to have boats stored, that means they're going to have cars and boats pulling the boats in. So I just want to make sure that that happens mm-hmm. if that, and that somehow it doesn't get lost in the transition.
Yes, sir.
And I'm happy to hear how we're going to do that.
I'm going to let Kevin answer that.
Mr. Chapman, I really appreciate those comments because containing sediments on site is one of the primary functions of our stormwater quality program, being able to filter out pollutants through the treatment of sedimentation and to keep it from migrating. The buffers do a tremendous are beneficial to containing that. Also, there will be construction entrances that will be not gravel all the way to the road. They'll go through an encroachment permit that will have an asphalt apron that will come out into the road. So that'll help contain. Now, it's not going to be perfect, but I think it will help contain a lot of the tracking that is involved that comes out of these type of land use. Surface materials to keep it from getting out into our drainage system. The drainage system here is tied in with a pond. So, and that pond's owned by the HOA, and I believe this site is actually owned by the HOA too. So it'll be in their best interest to make sure that sediment is contained on the property and not going into the drainage system that will be a detriment to the pond over time. So there's going to be some elements in place, and we'll take a look at that once we get the site plan and the technical drawings. And if there's any other alternative materials, we'll take a look at that as well.
Thank you, sir. I just have seen problems in the past, and I want to make sure that it gets taken care of as part of the process, because there I think it's a good idea to start doing more with pervious surface for parking or whatever, but there also is a detriment to doing that when crushed rock is used. So just want to make sure that gets taken care of as part of the review process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Committee, have any other questions?
I have one question, and this is, I just did a little math on my phone and I'm confused. So the existing boatyard is 80 by 150, which, if I did that right, is 12,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
by 150, yeah, 12,000 square feet. And then it says up there it's 49 by 25 spots. So 9 times 25 times 40 is only 9,000 square feet.
So I think they're increasing to 95 by 200. So from 80, so from 13,000 square feet to 19,000 square feet.
Okay.
And they're going to have 40 spots. It's going to be 9 by 25.
And what is their current boat storage solution for the community? Since
they use this, it's just they need to expand it. They need a little more room.
Okay.
And so this is the only option they have right now because their covenants restrictions prohibit it from using their driveways or their individual lots. So they just need to expand it. And the PD was so specific with those dimensions. So they have the room to expand and include all those buffers. The PD just wouldn't allow it.
Gotcha. All right. Do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
We have a motion to approve in a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item B, Old Georgetown Road.
Okay, this is two requests. One is to annex two properties, and the second is to zone them both OP, office professional. These properties are, the one in the front there is off of Chuck Dolly Boulevard, or the Old Georgetown Frontage Road. It's actually improved right now with the Shepherd Dermatology office. And then they also own the property in the rear, which is accessed off of BB Lane, which is a 15-foot private lane. So the office and the use is in the front. They do currently use that rear property for excess parking for their employees. And really what they want to do is come into the town and get off of septic, connect to sewer, and it is available in that area. The front property is recommended for commercial. The middle property is actually recommended for residential. And just to kind of put it in perspective, it's not really appropriate. I'm going to switch here to the future land use. So you've got across from it, you've got the church, catty corner, you've got the landscape company, you've got the dermatology office in the front, and then actually behind that vacant parking spot that they use, there's a maintenance yard for the campus. And so even though it's recommended for residential, it's really not appropriate. It's more appropriate, and it would make more sense to be integrated with that whole area and to zone it office professional. There's no plans right now to expand or anything, so they will come in, continue operating. It's all perfectly permitted under the office professional. That's an appropriate zoning. If they do decide to make any improvements or expand, then they would have to go through our DRT, DRB, and they'd have to come into compliance with our zoning and all of our requirements.
I move to approve, Madam Chairman.
We have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item C.
And just for clarification, that's for annexation and zoning.
Yes.
Yes. Got it. Okay. This last one is the text amendment that went to the Planning Commission for public hearing in December. And it's coming to you with a different recommendation, actually. So I'm going to go over both of those. But if you recall, this is the conditional uses associated with commercial properties. So if you go to our principal use table and you see that residential uses are a conditional use in all of our commercial districts, and then you go to the principal use conditions, there's three conditions. One of those conditions is that you can do up to 12 units an acre. So the proposal that came from committee and went for public hearing at the commission last month was that third condition. So it would go from 12 units an acre to 4 units an acre. However, density may be increased to 8 if those additional 4 were attainable housing. So 4 market, 4 attainable. That did go for public hearing, and the Planning Commission recommended to this body the following change. They recommended that density shall not exceed 2 units per acre. However, it may be increased to 10 if you those additional 8 were attainable housing. So 2 market, 8 attainable housing. So that was the recommendation from the commission that came to this body. And I'm happy to discuss further or answer any questions you have.
Do we have any discussion from the committee? Ms. Hyatt?
I think our focus should be on attainable housing. So if this suggestion helps us get to that goal. I could entertain that, but I'd like to hear what the rest of the committee thinks. I could move to approve this, Mr. Chapman.
Well, first of all, as committee knows, I was not in favor of this change. I think that the issue of multifamily, and I'm not sure I like that designation, but having units that don't put the number of children in schools that people think. We had a very nice letter from the Chamber of Commerce that was very telling in terms of what we would have. You have less cars than residential single family. The point I'm trying to make is we've had this lowered already. It was lowered a couple years ago from 16 down to 12. We need more affordable housing for sure. We also need to recognize that in a commercial setting, you don't have the amount of travel in a multifamily unit that you'll have with single family. For that reason, I am not in favor of making any changes to our current zoning since we already changed it, lowered it a couple of years ago.
Ms. Corley? Thank you, Mr. Chapman, for those comments. I
agree with Councilwoman Hyatt when she says our focus has been affordable housing and needs to continue to be. And I hear what you're saying, Mr. Chapman, and I read that letter. It was a good letter, but I think all we're doing by not lowering that number is just giving us more unaffordable housing. So I would 100% support commission's recommendations for this change.
Ms. Reed, I have a question. Has there been any input from the commercial sort of real estate community about this proposal from Planning Commission, the 2 and 10? Because I think my only concern is to market, is that if it's 2 and 10, is that an enticing enough proposition, or are we going to get nothing? Because I think that there needs to be enough market units to be a financial incentive to a builder to build the attainable units. And my worry is that the 2 units per acre is not enough of an incentive.
I have heard concerns from several groups. And really what I keep hearing is whether it's attainable or not attainable, 12 is the magic number when it comes to density and making it work. How that looks, how much of it is market rate, how much of it is attainable housing, I'm not real sure. But I do hear from several groups that regardless, 12 is the magic number for making it work economically. And again, so I've not heard any specifics as to how it should be split. Mm-hmm. I know I've read that a 50-50 market is good. But I'm certainly no expert in that area.
Well, that's something that that concerns me is the economic viability, because I think, you know, if we make the rule so narrow that we get zero of these units, then we're not solving the problem at all. And so I think I would be more comfortable either waiting on this and getting more information, or and I would be comfortable with going back to 12 units and doing a 50-50 split. I think that would make me more comfortable, where it's 6 units per acre, but you get an additional 6 if it's attainable housing. And that's kind of where I am on this. So is there any motion to come out of this issue?
I do want to point out that we probably should make some requirement of attainable housing, because right now people are asking us not to change it, but it does not, it makes no consideration. What we have on the books has no consideration for attainable housing. So I was comfortable with the commission's recommendation, so, but it sounds like everybody else may be more comfortable with our original suggestion. I would like to move, one of them forward so that we can move forward with this attainable requirement.
And the original proposal was 4 and 8.
Yeah.
That I think I'm, with 12 being sort of the magic number, I worry with 4 and 8, we're not going to get any, because it's not enough in order for it to be, 12 is the magic number, yeah. Minimum. Ms. Corley?
How do we bring this to council? Because I feel like we want something. I think our residents would be, if you're going to poll, I don't know. I just think that we would get more support for more of a 4 number, but I would love to hear councils. I hate to bring that to them without us coming to some sort of conclusion, but I know I'm on the lower side, and I think Mr. Chapman, you're probably on the higher side, and now GM, I think that you're on that side too. So I think we're kind of 2-2. I would love to hear what they have to say, if that makes sense.
Mr. Chapman.
Madam Chairman, we have heard from the home builders, and they are not in favor of this change. They'd like the idea of having the split between attainable and the total number of units. And so my suggestion is that we hear further from commercial entities. If we're going to have multifamily, I think it's better to have it in an area that's already commercial than immediately next to single-family residential. This is the area where, if we're going to have it, it should be. And again, we're having less children crowding the schools. We're having less traffic than we have for single family. And again, if we're going to have anything but single family sanitized city, it needs to be in a commercial area. So that's why I don't like the fact that we're singling out commercial areas for this and bringing it down further. So I'm for sending it back and hearing from the builders, hearing from commercial establishments, and then making maybe a more informed decision.
I'd like to move that we, since y'all don't feel that this suggestion from commission is going to be attractive at all, our original numbers were closer to a 50-50 mix. And I'd like to move that we, since we've already had that at a public hearing, that we approve that and send it on to full council for their input.
For input. So, okay. So yeah. motion to the council for input.
No, for a vote. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They'll be able to tell us what they think at the time. So, I mean, we've had a public hearing on it. We've been talking about it. So we might as well just send it forward. It is a 50-50 number. And I'd like to just go ahead and vote with council.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Mr. DeMora, I have a question. If this were to go to council with the 4 and 4 number, is it possible for council to modify it to increase that number upon second reading?
Upon second reading, yes.
Okay. That's my question. Okay. Is there any further discussion on this motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right, it's by 3-1. It passes to go to council for a vote with the 4-4 number. Moving on to item D.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Committee. We have before you a proposal to create a new environmental program in the town of Mount Pleasant. The focus of that environmental program is going to be on non-residential development. This is redevelopment and new development of commercial property, mixed-use property, industrial developments. It also pertains to including a point system to ensure meaningful low-impact development techniques are being incorporated in each site design. The point system, we decided to go with the point system because these LIDs are not very quantifiable, meaning that you can't put a meter on them like you do a water system, or you can't calculate like you do a stormwater. And there's a variety of LID techniques, so you can't really have the point system makes it much easier to provide that level of importance to the ones we want to encourage the most. So what we have is a proposal to amend Chapter 155 to create a new subsection, and also to amend some buffer yards and the area and pavement requirements of Chapter 156 with the program. So very briefly, just highlighting some of the main features of it. There's four impact categories taking the lead from the LEED certification program. They have impact categories and how they created their program. We essentially did the same thing, but we tailored ours towards more site design elements within this. There are four impact categories, making things very simple and easy to understand. We have the first categories: protect, restore, and conserve natural water resources. To generate points in this category, for instance, the participation in the Mount Pleasant Water Works Water Smart Program, very easy to do. That will generate points. Water harvesting, that will generate points. The reuse of water conservation elements, those all will generate points in that particular category. The next category is protection, the ecosystem and biodiversity. That's your enhancement of wildlife. Examples would be increasing the tree canopy, pollinator gardens, having buffer yards that connect in with other buffer yards to create wildlife corridors. All those will generate separate points. And then the third category is the livability. That is the mobility, aesthetics, and well-being. You have the bike racks, the pedestrian, improving in pedestrians, having bus stations. Those type elements will also create points in that particular category. And the last category is promote energy efficiency. This is the energy conservation element. This is energy efficient use of energy efficient appliances, the EV stations, anything that provides opportunities to help with conserve energy will generate points in that particular category. And also, sustainable material is also included. Local source materials, reclaimed, repurposing materials, all those will generate points for those particular categories. So how the program is set up, we have the minimum criteria is you have to reach 100 points, very obtainable, very achievable with the existing properties. But within that 100 points, you have to have an equal distribution of 25 points. We don't want someone coming to the town that has 100 points in all one category. We would like to have a very robust environmental program that encourages and gets the discussion going in each one of the categories that we want to address. Now, The second part of this setup is the incentive part. That was the most challenging of this program. We do have two levels. Level two is reached with 100 points, and then we have a level three, which is more or less a placeholder right now for future expansion of the program. But once you reach the 100 points, you don't necessarily have to have the equal distribution of points. You could tally up your points in any one of the particular categories. And we'll get to the incentives in just a second. So as a result of the many stakeholder meetings that we've conducted over the past couple of years, the overriding response was what's going to be the rate of return based upon what type of incentives we're going to be proposing. So in order to kind of sort through the various incentives that we had, we looked at what really does a rate of return mean. And there's four different areas that we were trying to address with the incentives. One of the areas is it going to be a one-to-one or a financial direct offsetting measure? Is the incentive going to improve the efficiency of the permitting? Is the applicant going to be able to get his permit and gets provided out on the market sooner? Is the incentive going to produce some type of additional cash flow? Is it going to increase the building size where they have more square foot area? And also, is the incentive going to increase their physical value and the appreciation of the real estate property? So we took those four different categories and we made a list of what potential incentives that we had. And going through, we did have, obviously the impact fee credit that came up in the discussion of providing those type of offsetting measures, which would be a direct financial offset. Looking at the state regulations for impact fee credits, you can't generate and use money for something that the impact fee was not generated for, meaning that if the impact fee credit was to offset traffic impacts, you can't really use it for environmental. So we really had to take that one off the table as an option for this program. And so that left us with number seven, which is land building dimensions. That would be the highest because increase in square foot area would improve the asset value. We took this to flood committee level. It really wasn't a palatable from a political standpoint, so we had to remove that from level three. But as we said, level three is just kind of a placeholder, something for future expansion. Maybe later down the road, we'll be able to have something that that we'd be able to replace that with. So the thresholds, the minimum thresholds and incentives, as we mentioned, level one is the minimum threshold. That's 100 points using the LID techniques, have an equal distribution of all four impact categories. Level two, that's the option for the developer. If they generate 200 points in their sites, they'll have the ability to have some buffer width flexibility between similarly zoned adjacent properties. That means commercial to commercial, that buffer in between will be able to be reduced. We don't want to reduce the buffer between commercial and residential because that does serve a specific purpose to protect the residential property. So it's just similarly zoned property. Also, the other option is dual use of buffers, which currently is not allowed. That, for instance, could be bioswales inside of your buffers or parts of your ponds could be used within the buffer area. And then the last option could be the use of pervious pavers in parking spaces. With no more than 20% gravel parking spaces, we don't want to create a negative to where all commercial property has nothing but gravel, loose gravel surfaces for the parking spaces. So we're limiting that to 20%, those being located farthest away from the building. But what we're trying to encourage is the pervious hard surface material as an incentive if the applicant so choose. So those would not be an actual requirement, but it does give that carrot, that incentive for site designers and developers to have some type of offsetting benefit for doing more environmental techniques. So again, the ordinance in front of you is to amend 155 to create a new subsection of environmental guidelines for land development. It's also to amend parts of Chapter 156 that allows for exceptions of the buffer widths, allows for exceptions of the surface material to be pervious material. And so our next steps would be, we completed the public hearing at the Planning Commission. That was done on December 14th. We received the review and recommendations from Planning Commission. And now we're before you to receive your review and recommendation. Our next steps following this could be to come back to you guys with any changes that y'all would like to incorporate into this, or we can move forward to Town Council for the first public hearing for Chapter 155 and first reading, and then the next second reading, final reading. And then what we're proposing is, if it continues on this course and this timeline, is to have an effective date of April 1st, 2023. So that's a scaled down version of my longer presentation, but I do have examples and here to ask, you know, answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Committee, do you have any questions? Mr. Chapman?
Mr. Mitchell, this is similar, maybe exactly what we reviewed in Flood Resilience Committee. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Okay, that's what I thought. Thank you.
Sir.
Ms. Corley?
Again, I think our residents are really going to love that we have been working on this so diligently, and thank you so much again for working on this. And a lot of these things, I think, might even become things that we do, just, you know, it may just dictate how, what kind of ordinances we have in the future. So again, I love this, and I think our residents are going to really appreciate it, and it really speaks of how much we are, this council and our staff is always so cognizant of how important the environment is and anything we can do to protect it. So yeah, I'm in full support of this.
Thank you. I do have one question. In the incentives list, there was, I understood the first two as to why those were in, those were like benefits. What I didn't understand was the pervious parking. Is it just cheaper to do gravel and pervious as opposed to, because it, as opposed to paved, and that's why it's an incentive to get to do that?
Well, the benefit to having impervious parking spaces and impervious gravel is you're not generating as much runoff. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you're reducing your pond size, which does create more usable space for more parking spaces. And those parking spaces will control the size of your building. So indirectly, you're being benefited by reducing the amount of runoff and using more impervious material.
All right.
Through okay. That as an incentive.
Gotcha. And the and our current ordinance requires a paved parking lot. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does require paving a paved surface for all the parking spaces up to the minimum, and then above that, then you're allowed to have pervious parking. But our ordinance are specific. It can't be pervious for anything less than what's the minimum spaces that are required.
Okay, thank you so much. That's just what I wanted to understand. Thank you so much for your hard work on this. Is there any further questions on from the committee? Do I have a motion? Move to approve. Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item number 6.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Discussion and possible action regarding outstanding short-term rental ordinance amendments.
Okay. I am confident we are going to wrap this up today. So last month, we got the directive to move forward with the enhanced parking requirements. We got the directive to move forward with the $1,000 and the amount of civil penalties, and then the directive to move forward with legal drafting an ordinance to allow the transfer of permit in certain situations. So there were three things that we were asked to bring back this month for discussion. And that was the minimum rental requirement, the estimated cost of the STR program, and then increased fees for whole house rental. So the first thing I wanted to point out was just the minimum rental requirement. I know that staff has talked about this, our desire to perhaps have some minimum rental a minimum night rental in place. Right now, I just wanted to let you know, so current operators were allowed to apply early, so it was November 15th to December 15th. Jane has went through all those. So if you'll recall, we had 437 permits before. Of those 437, 416 have reapplied. 27 of those have never rented. So perhaps if we had a minimum night rental, we could have denied those permits. That would have brought us down to 388, and then we could have offered 12 spots to those on the waiting list. So that was kind of one of the things we wanted to point out. So we did bring the number down, but we're still over the 400. So we're at 416. So we did want to talk about the fact that there are 27 that have never rented and the census program was put in place. If it is the desire of the, and I know we've talked about different scenarios, if it is the desire of the committee to move forward with an ordinance amendment to require a minimum night rental, we did see, even though it's really not in the ordinance, we had it on our application that they had to provide proof. Some of them did, who never rented, and we could see fake bookings. They could create, you know, the paperwork and make it look like they had rented one 29-night rental. So what we would recommend if we do put this in place is that it's not only a minimum number of nights, but perhaps a minimum number of bookings, so that you can't have one. It makes them work a little more if they're gonna create some fake paperwork. And I'm not even gonna ask Jane some of the stuff she's seen. It's crazy, but we think this would be a good idea, and it would allow us to deny those reapplications next time that have never rented, and perhaps allow people that want the opportunity to rent. So that was the first topic, and I don't know if you want me to keep going or we want to discuss
this first.
Let's
start with this topic
first. Okay.
Yes. Committee, any thoughts on this, Ms. Corley?
I think we talked about that before, and I would like to keep that number really low. So if we're going to do a minimum, I'm not sure what numbers we were vacillating with. I think it was like 20. Did we say 27? I don't know why that number's coming to me. But I would love to keep it super low, like 10. 10 would be a good number for me. I'm not sure where you guys are at. Mr. Chapman?
Well, what was the number we initially had for number of nights as a minimum?
We don't have
one. No, I know, but in what we were looking at,
I think we had 30, and we realized that 30 may not be a good number unless you have a minimum number of bookings. So if you perhaps wanted to do 10 nights, maybe you could have, we would require it to be broken up into three separate bookings or something like that. Because otherwise you could just do one night,
okay,
one booking for 10 nights.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds a little bit crazy, but people fake that. They create fake paperwork, write checks to the county for their accommodations in the amount of $1 or $2, and then they think they're covered. So we just feel like it should be kind of separated into maybe three or four bookings, depending on the number of nights that you want to put in place.
Okay. Another thing that was brought up was if you don't book within an amount of time. Did you want to mention that today?
You know,
six months.
We felt like that maybe wasn't good because there are genuine reasons why people don't rent. Say you're doing renovations in the first 6 months, then you've lost it and you're actually genuinely making a change and you want to rent. So we felt like there shouldn't be that time period, like the first 6 months, but you have your permit, you have it for 1 year, and you're required to rent a minimum, whatever it is, certain number of nights broken into three, four bookings. We think that would be simple, it would be easy to administer, and people would actually hopefully use the permit that they're given. And then if they don't, we can deny it, and that would continue to bring us down under the 400.
Three bookings, nine nights.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people book for a week, right? I think... Mm-hmm. I think that I think the number should be a little bit higher. I mean, if you're going to rent for just 10 nights, I don't even know, you know, that's worth that, taking up a spot of that permit, right? Like for people who, that's not using it so that you can stay in your home, mm-hmm, right? That's not using it to,
as you know, once a month, as a once a month would be a nice benefit, I think. So
12 bookings. Well, we would want to make it 12 bookings, I guess, but like 24 nights. So like a week. So if you did a weekend a month, that'd be 24 nights.
That sounds reasonable.
24 nights and a minimum of 4 bookings.
4 bookings? Okay.
Does that sound acceptable?
Yes,
yes.
Okay. All right. So that's where we are on that one. We're not going to vote at this point. We'll get them all together and then we'll vote. So let's move on to the next item.
Okay. So the next one was just the discussion. Jane worked on this with our finance department and business license and tried to put together a rough estimate of what the program costs. And again, this is a very rough estimate. So if you take in consideration of all the time, effort, staff, software, all of those things, it came out to over $152,000 for the cost of the program. The next, and this is getting into the increased fees for whole house rentals, but I wanted to show on this slide that we have the permit fee. So if we have the true number of $400,000 and the current fee is $250,000, that's $100,000. For 21-22, business license fee collected $31,200. So that gives you an idea of the fees that were collected through the permit fee and the business license fee based on the cost of the program. So we did come up a little bit short. Again, those are all estimates on this page.
So the reason I think it was a long time ago, but I think the reason that I wanted to talk about, instead of making it based on number of nights that you rent for the fee, to base it on whole house rental for the fee, is because I think what we want to incentivize as a community is for people to stay in their homes, right? We want, you know, grandma to be able to stay in the house and as long as she wants and be able to rent out a room in her home to help make ends meet. When you have a whole house that you are renting, that is what is eating up affordable housing. That is what is taking up available housing stock and converting it into short-term rentals and pushing out long-term renters from those homes. So I think as a balance, the additional increase in a fee should go on. And as you can see, what's most lucrative and what's most prevalent is not people renting out a bedroom in their home. It's these whole house rentals. And so I think that in order to cover the cost of our program, which we're not covering currently, and then also to potentially either, you know, hire someone part-time for code enforcement or full-time if we're able to get to that number, I think raising the whole house fee to $500 would, and I believe some of these homes are pulling in six figures a year. Is that correct?
The average night of renting is, I think, $275, $280. So, yeah, it's probably pretty accurate.
Yeah, so six figures a year and a $250 permit fee is... I mean, there's a reason we're increasing the penalty, right? Is because it's cheaper to pay the penalty and illegally rent an SDR.
Yeah.
So I think a $500 fee is not unreasonable for these whole house rentals. So that's what I'm comfortable with.
I can support that 100%.
Yeah. I'm fine with that too. All right. So that's what we're for $500 for whole house rentals, $250 for grandma.
Okay. All right. So we will move forward to, do you want this to go to council? Or are we comfortable going to the commission with public hearings to make all these changes?
Can I add something? I know we have mentioned many times about how many permits one person or entity is allowed to have, mm-hmm. but we've never like added it to the list as something that we could look into. I think legal has said it might be hard to enforce, but have we really looked into how to limit how many permits one individual can have? Because I think we have some people that have quite a few that are eating up a big portion of our permits.
Yeah, we've discussed it. I think right now we have about 130 permit holders, or 40 permit holders own about 130 to 150 of the permits. And I also know that legal did have some concerns about, because as you know, what they would do is if you limit per one person or entity, they can create another LLC. So it's not that we couldn't put that in the ordinance, I don't think. It would mm-hmm. just, it there would be, there's always loopholes. But that's something maybe David might want to speak on more.
I mean, they would have to file like 6 tax returns and do a whole lot if they worked around it, you know, to have all those permits. They'd have to be.
And I think one more thing from staff administrative perspective would be, so say that ordinance went through and it was effective, and then these people who hold more than, say the limit is 2, and they hold more than 2, are they grandfathered in? Are they protected until such time that they go away? Or do we force them to only choose 2? I think, how would that be administered once it's adopted for those that already have multiples? I think that would be something that we would need to address too.
Right. Yeah, that should be part of the conversation, but I don't know how other council members, I'd rather a broader audience own these permits rather than a few individuals hoarding them, and it's not offered up.
I concur in that, and I don't know what the magic number is, but there should be a limit. Having 20 permits for one entity is like having a hotel, and that's where I'm coming from. I just think, I don't know how to do it, but I think there is a way to do it. And it also helps, I think, to distribute this rather than having them all in one place.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Glenn? Yeah, I think we all share the same want. It's just how do we get there? It just seems like there's a loophole for everything. And I feel like all the work we've done over the last 3 years has really helped us to get this program even better than it was. And I don't know. I mean, and do we grandfather them in? That's the main. I think the way, if we just keep moving forward, we're not encouraging that at all. We're definitely disencouraging it. So I feel like we have it handled, and it would be really difficult for somebody to begin that now. So do we worry about, does that make sense? So if we're going to fix it, we're going to grandfather those old people in. I don't think they could do it now. So,
yeah, I agree with Ms. Corley. I think that if we were to implement sort of a limitation, it would have to be on a future basis. I don't think that we could go through and pull permits away from people who already have them. So I'm not opposed at all to that concept, because I think, let's say that you did deny the 27 people who didn't use it. Mm-hmm. Well, what if the first 5 people on the wait list already have 3 permits and they're just on the wait list, right? That we don't want them to get their 4th permit, their 5th permit, that kind of thing. And we want to open it up for a wider audience. So I actually think putting something in for a forward-looking basis is not a bad idea. Ms. Hyatt?
Could we get legal to chime in on how it works to not grandfather? I mean, we've never really done anything that way, but I'm just curious the legalities of not allowing people to renew things they have, just out of curiosity.
Good morning. A number of questions. First, any comments aren't meant to say that this is unenforceable. There are a number of hurdles, as Ms. Hyatt points out. The first thing is that if anyone wanted to change to an entity, an LLC, a trust, anything, remember that requires a change in title to the property as well. And there are a whole number of consequences that go along with that, including reassessment of taxes. So there are a number of reasons why an individual wouldn't want to do that. They'd obviously have to make a financial decision as to whether that cost outweighed the benefit of the rental. So it certainly is a worthwhile endeavor. Yes, sometimes it's very hard to manage, because as you are aware, LLCs do not generally require published information. So you have an operating agreement that is not part of the state record, nor is it required to be. And determining those owners sometimes can be a difficult process. So that would be at least the difficulty. As to the grandfathering portion, that is really a committee and council decision. It certainly can be done, and that in my opinion, is a policy question as to whether you prefer that or not prefer that, whatever the number is. This is a permit. It's not a constitutional right. It's not a land right. It's not a vested right. It's not anything like that. And so I feel very comfortable saying that that would be appropriate should committee and council wish to go that direction.
Okay. Is this something that committee feels like we want to include in whatever sort of package we present, either to council or to planning committee at this point in time? Is Hyatt yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we should work out all the details and not have it linger any further. If this is the last thing that we're kind of interested in,
okay,
then we could just move it forward with everything. So I don't know what would be the next thing.
I think for me, I think grandfathering in, or at least putting it on a forward moving basis, is probably the easiest to administer. It is, I think, the most fair, because we're basically pulling the rug out from under people who have worked under the system, you know what I mean? Because we didn't have anything before we implemented this system. People are working under the rules of the system. And then to come in a couple years later and just pull the rug out from under and say, you may have 3 permits, now you only get 2. Choose which one you're going to, you know. And people don't reapply, right? So, like, we had people not reapply this year. So I think eventually things will drop off. You know, there'll be turnover. And I think that on an ongoing future basis, not allowing people to have more, I mean, I'd be comfortable with saying 1, you know, 1 per entity. That's I'm comfortable with that.
Moving forward,
yeah.
Madam Chairman, I think we've got a pretty good consensus on the first items that we've reviewed. I think we're where we need to be, and I think we need to send them on to council to get this finished. I think the number of permits per individual or per LLC or whatever it is needs some work. What I would like to do is send what we are pretty confident of right now to get that underway. We're already in a new year. And if we can come up with something that we all agree to on the numbers, that would get us for something next year. And that's where I think we are. Because we've already got items in these changes where if you don't use it and you're just hoarding the permit, you're going to lose it. So we've already got something in the new material that sort of takes that into account. And what I'd like to do is take what we already know we, the committee, are comfortable with and send it forward and continue to work on how we would make sure what the right number is. I wouldn't have any problem with 2 or even 3 per individual group. So I just think we've got 3 issues that we can move forward, get everything together for this year, and for next year, make a decision on how many permits per individual.
Ms. Hyatt?
Is that a change that could be made at a second reading?
This all has to go to public hearing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could, Mr. Chapman, I hear what you're saying. What we could do is advertise the public hearing for all the things we've discussed and possible changes to the number of permits one entity can hold. And we can hold a discussion and public hearing at the commission level and see what kind of input we get. But this all has to go for public hearing. So however you would all direct me to do that, but it would be a matter of discussion at commission if you so choose.
Could we use the number 2, the original discussion, and then at some point, if we want to vote and change and council change it to one or three,
yeah,
we can.
I'd
like to move forward with,
yes,
because I think we all feel comfortable with limiting the number.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ms. Hyatt, and I think that splitting this is just going to drag it out further.
Yes. Right.
So if we can put together a nice package, present it to for the public hearing and move forward from there. So I think I'm comfortable with two, because that is something that could be amended on second reading.
And ma'am, that's fine. We can do that. I'd recommend we have to advertise these. And one concern we always have is, are we truthful and clear to the public? I don't want to use truthful. Are we clear to the public? And I would make it as broad as possible by just simply say limiting the number of permits. And okay, that discussion can be had, and public can weigh in on that.
That sounds good. And is there, yeah, okay, so let's include that.
Okay.
Let's include that. And then was there one more item?
That was it?
That was it, okay.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
Can we just summarize really quickly? We are going to, we're going to increase the fees for whole house rentals to $500.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a yes on the parking issue. Can we go back to that first screen? Sorry, so that.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, so parking requirement. Mm-hmm. We're increasing that requirement or making it clear. We're increasing the civil penalties. Legal's going to draft an ordinance for
mm-hmm.
families. Minimum rental requirement, we're 24 days for bookings. We are $500 for whole house, $250 for non. And we are going to talk about limiting the number of permits that an individual entity can hold.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Hyatt?
How are we distinguishing ADU? That's not going to be whole unit?
No, our ordinance requires that if you have an ADU, you have to live on site. So
okay.
You either live in the house or in the ADU and you rent okay. one or the other out. So we've kind of lumped that with having a bedroom.
Okay.
So if you look at it, 334 whole house rentals, the owner does not live in on site. For the ADU or bedroom, the owner has to live on site.
Okay. All right. And then do we need a motion to send this to Planning Commission? Is that correct?
Yes. I move that we move this to Planning Commission.
For second.
Public hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right, and 7 minutes late, if there's nothing for it to become to this committee, we are adjourned. Let's do that. 7 minutes over.